committee to order. Today's April Fool's Day. This is all a big joke. No. It's 9:10, and with us we have Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Representative and Co-Chair Schnell, Vice Chair Stoltz, and myself, Co-Chair Meyer. So the first thing we're going to take up is the House Bill 178, request special request license plate. The sponsor, Representative Olson, is here. So if there is any other amendments, he is here to speak for or against them. We had one amendment yesterday that we've taken action on. Is there anything else, any other action to take on this bill at this time? Seeing not, Representative Foster.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move H3178 off committee with respect to the negative recommendations as amended.
Any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 178 passes the Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Olson.
Nice.
All right, next bill is House Bill 175. Is it 185? Okay. All right, my notes are wrong. 185.
Whose bill is
it? Co-Chair Schnell.
Really?
Well, we better sign this to a subcommittee.
Might be brought you a sticker.
Couple of them. Okay, and for the co-chair, Ms. Wright is going to tell us about the bill. Let's see, also for public testimony, we had Diane Behrens. And we have on teleconference, Rod Kembe. Okay, we don't have diet. All right. So, what about Dr. Richard Mansager? Sue, you're it. Tell us what this bill does. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chairs. For the record, my name is Sherilyn Wright, and I work for Representative Mike Chenault. The purpose of this bill is to inform students that attend post-secondary education institutions of grave viral danger, viral and bacterial danger of meningococcal meningitis. Forgive me for butchering that. This is an event-driven piece of legislation with a young man that unfortunately died very quickly from this disease in Soldotna in a matter of just a very few hours. And basically, that's all I have to say, that we need to inform students that this disease exists, that it's a danger in close quarters, and that it's extremely contagious and very deadly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wright. Any questions? Reps at home.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, I noticed there's no fiscal note. I was just curious, does this have a public health component to it that would have a cost to the state through our public health immunization process?
Representative Holm, through the chair, it very well could have. At this point, it does not. It does not have a fiscal note or a fiscal impact, but we expect that it very well could have in the future.
Thank you for that. I just was thinking that, you know, like we have a facility in Fairmax that does immunizations for free for those who cannot pay and for nominal fees for those who can. Do you know how many folks, is this all of the students would then be immunized? Is that the idea? In the state?
Representative Holm, through the chair, they would not necessarily be immunized. They would be informed that the disease exists. Many times this disease grabs hold and takes a student There was a man out in Unalaska, I believe, 3 weeks ago, and there were 20 people that had to be immunized because he had a very contagious form of the disease. But this bill would inform the students that this is a serious problem in college institutions and not necessarily require them, but they would have to sign an informed document.
Sure. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Representative Holmes. Mr. Stoltz?
Thank you. Is there any movement afoot anywhere that you would know of to require immunizations as a condition of enrollment? And just to get on the record, is there any intent down the line to look at that, or is this purely educational? I just want to know on the record if there's...
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, at this point, no. The Center for Disease Control is recommending the immunizations at this point, and it may very well be a requirement in the future.
There's a follow-up. Just philosophically, is that a goal for the sponsor? I guess that's what I want to get at. How do you fit into this goal?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair, I don't believe at this time it's the goal for the sponsor. I will tell you this and give you my opinion. If I had a young person going into college now, they would be immunized, regardless of the cost and regardless of the issue.
No, and I'm not trying to put it on the spot, but we're going on directives, and I know the chairman's a pretty conservative level-headed guy, and I'm not trying to. And this is something that's touched my family, not a post-secondary, but when you have a big family, it seems like just about everything if you had a niece very unexpectedly, and she was fortunately a survivor that nearly lost her life and her mobility from spinal meningitis, and that just came from nowhere, and it's certainly sobering to me, and I think awareness and education is a good thing. There's certainly another flip side of the whole immunization issue, and it doesn't come without risks. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Go to Representative Keller.
Just a couple of questions, Ms. Red. The risk that you just touched on, I assume the education includes some statement about the risk that is associated with immunization. Is that in there? That's one question. Let me just ask the second one. I don't think they're related, but perhaps they are. We also mentioned the new section that, where is it? A post-secondary in D on page 3, line 4, subsection D. Post-secondary educational institution that's made reasonable effort to comply with this section is not liable, and on down through the end of that section. I'm just wondering, is the implication that if this changes our liability in any way? In other words, I was not aware that life isn't a crapshoot, and if you go somewhere and get a disease, that's somehow the responsibility of the institution to protect it. Does this kind of by trying to say that they're not liable if they do a good job of talking about it, but the reverse implication is that they're liable if they don't. And I'm just wondering if we're not adding a problem there?
Representative Kelly, through the chair. To answer your first question, immunizations and health care warnings are normally given by the provider. That's not something that I believe that the institution would be responsible for. And to answer your second question, regardless of the language in a bill that absolves an institution of civil liability, I've figured out that a lawyer can always figure out how to sue. I'm not sure that this language would prevent a lawsuit, and I'm not sure that it would protect against a lawsuit. I guess it's there just for a comfort zone.
Well, I haven't learned yet to think quite like a lawyer, but I think I am progressing okay down that trail. But it seems to me that if I read that and I could demonstrate that you didn't do a good enough job and my client got it, I might take you for a ride that you might not have gone on if you hadn't said that. That's my only question. Since I didn't hear the debate in the other committee, I just thought that's a question that I had when I read it.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. This went to this didn't go to judiciary, did it? Went to Hess. Representative Shaw.
To answer Representative Stoltz, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer Representative Stoltz, it's not my intention that we start requiring immunization. Some of the cases that we've dealt with, the one in particular, while we wish that we were all informed, and we wished we were as bright as we could be, some of that information is not out there, and unfortunately at times the information becomes available too late. And so, you know, our intent with this is simply to try to allow the word to get out there that there is a problem. It is very deadly, and we would like students to be informed of this problem. So that, you know, that's the intent of this piece of legislation.
Thank you. That's an intent I agree with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Representative Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, and I likewise agree with the intent. And Ms. Wright answered that question about the notification. The provider of the shot has to do that, and I that answers that question. But that second one, Mr. Chairman, if I might ask the sponsor, do we risk anything by putting D in there that if we just took it out, this thing wouldn't be a better bill? And maybe we could take a look at that in between now and the other body or something. All I'm worried about is that by trying to help things here, where we say if you made a reasonable effort, then you're not responsible for a kid getting this, whereas I guess my belief is, like I said, life has got its risks, and I hope that this doesn't imply that if you didn't make a reasonable effort, that somehow we're responsible for every disease that comes shooting across the bow in a room that, I don't know.
Right, and I can understand your concern. I'm not a lawyer either. I'm not a lawyer either, but you know, I know I realize your concerns that it may raise the issue. As my staff stated earlier, I am also of the belief that regardless of how well you try to do your job, how well you try to inform people on an issue that may concern them, if indeed something happens to that person, you're always subject to being scrutinized by the judicial system. And, you know, so I don't know if this helps or hurts. You know, maybe Representative Croft could give us his opinion of it and whether it is a hindrance or a help to the bill.
Representative Croft charges by the hour, though, so.
That's fine.
Okay.
As long as you charge, this is not a problem.
I think Representative Kelly's probably right. I was rereading that section. I think it'd be a hard lawsuit anyway to get him for not immunizing. We don't have a duty to immunize, all those things. And the more I read that, the more I had the same reaction as Representative Kelly. It seems, I mean, when we pass this out and it's a judiciary looking at it, I think a reasonable judge would read it that way. Well, the legislature must have meant something by the opposite. If you make reasonable efforts, you're not. That must mean if you don't, you might be. It's not this idea out of control. I think that's a reasonable reading of that provision. And I think you're probably safer without it. For what that's worth.
Okay, now we just need Representative Weirock, and we can get another.
Give the other side.
Representative Leduza, an attorney, bring her up.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Two perspectives there. What's the sponsor? Do you have any thoughts?
I have no problem with amending it to the second D.
Move to amend, Mr. Chairman. conceptual amendment to remove D if that is...
Okay, let me just hold on here a second. I think we didn't have anyone to testify, correct? So public testimony is closed. Okay, your amendment's in order then. So we have a motion to move section D. Is there any objection? Say not. That is amended. Any other discussion on House Bill 185? Any other thoughts, concerns, amendments? Okay, see not. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move out 1885 out of committee as amended with the death would come up with another burden.
Any objections?
Nothing.
Okay, see none. Bill moves out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. For the record, we have Representative Croft and Representative Hawker have joined us, as well as Representative Moses. Good morning, Representative Moses. Happy April Fool's Day.
My kids have already hit me 2 or 3 times.
Okay. House Bill 83. Representative Ledoux, come on up here. This is a Seismic Hazards Commission. You're bringing Representative Gettenberg? Good. Okay, the more the merrier. I think this is the first time for you two here at House Finance. We're a pretty easy group.
It's definitely my first time.
Good. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't you... go ahead and introduce the bill. Tell us what it's about. Looks like we have several people to testify. Some are here in the audience and there's some online. So why don't you go ahead and introduce it to us.
All right. For the record, I'm Representative Gabrielle Ledoux and I'm sponsoring the CS for House Bill 83. Representative David Guttenberg is co-sponsor. Chairman Myers and co-chair Chenault and committee members of the Finance Committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. The CS for House Bill 83 adds tsunamis to the scope of the work of the Seismic Hazard Safety Commission and extends the commission until June 30, 2010. Presently, it is scheduled to sunset on June 30, 2005. The commission is not extended, it would cease to exist June 30, 2006. Alaska is the longest coast in the United States. There are experts who may be testifying and have testified before the previous two committees about seismic activity and the potential of tsunamis in Alaska, so I will not dwell on that aspect. The purpose of the commission is to try and mitigate the dangers and devastation of earthquakes and tsunamis. We cannot control what nature may unleash, but we can prepare. The Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission is established in the Department of Natural Resources. The Department of Natural Resources is to provide staff support for the commission, and members of the commission are to be appointed by the governor. The fiscal note on this bill will be addressed by a representative of DNR. Seismic hazards pose serious problems for our state, and the commission will focus on these loss reduction goals. Consideration was given to recommendations from the Division of Budget and Audit and the members of the commission, and the number of members of the commission was increased from 9 to 11 in order to have more local representation and expertise. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Guttenberg, did you
want to add? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to say, this is by far the most comfortable room to work in. You have a great asset here. But let me just render down exactly what this commission is about and what it's supposed to do. Commission has no authority. It can't tell anybody anything. It can't mandate anything. What it's supposed to do is what nobody else in the state does. What we currently have is we have groups out there that are do preparedness for disaster, earthquakes, tsunami, volcanoes, and they're set up to respond before, during, and to come in after and do and clean up and put our infrastructure back in place. But there's nobody in the state that says there's certain things that we can do. There might be certain things that we can do because we really don't know until they meet that would mitigate the disasters that would happen. If you were to take off, well, this building, this roof doesn't have a suspended ceiling, but if you were to take off the ceiling tiles out of a suspended ceiling, you would see additional bracing that was added for earthquake to make sure that the suspended ceilings don't come down. In the aftermath of 9/11, there was a lot of television specials and studies on what would have happened to keep the buildings, 9/11 buildings, up. Some of those recommendations or viewpoints were the things that this commission would do. In the case of tsunamis, how deep should the concrete be? How much? What kind of remediation can you do before it happens, so that when it happens, lives are saved, damage is not more extensive than it could have been? And there's another aspect of it that that isn't thought about is that as relates to insurance. People living in Earthquake Park in Anchorage might have one level of potential disaster, and their insurance might be reflected on that. But people living up on the North Slope or the Arctic or Bethel, which has a very little seismic activity, would not have it anywhere near that potential damage. So the insurance rates would be different out there. Well, there's nobody to draw the lines around the state to say this place is a high risk and this place isn't. And this place should have volcano risk and this place should have tsunami risk. And that's part of what we expect this commission to do, to come back with recommendations. And that's one of the reasons why the local government members were added, to reflect where the concerns are, because these recommendations are going to go out and local governments have the ability to adopt them or reject them or take pieces and parts of them and address them in a local community. And there are members on here, or there are people online who are experts in these fields that have been working on them all their lives. Most of the states, and I don't have the number in front of me, that have risks like we do, and we by far have the greatest number of risks, have commissions like this to determine whether or not there are risks, what the risk, and how they can be mediated and prevented. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Denberg. Just for the purposes of getting a little historical knowledge on this commission, it seems like it was in 2002 that we set up, we passed the bill, 2001, to set up this commission.
Yeah.
But then Governor Knowles didn't appoint anyone, as far as I know, and then Governor Murkowski has. Why do you think that is?
I think it was just one of those things that fell through the seam. Okay. And it was coming up for sunset, and unless they saw what the actions of the legislature, if the legislature wanted it or not, that would, I mean, I'm just speculating. Well, I know it obviously fell through the seams. And if this legislature wants to do it and passes it, I would assume that the governor would get the message that it's something we want done. And certainly in the face of the disaster in the South Pacific.
Right. Yeah, I think this is very timely. And the only reason why I bring it up is that, you know, I supported back in 2001. I still support it. And I'm just disappointed that neither governor did anything.
We are also.
Okay. Any questions for the sponsors before we go to the public testimony? Representative Schnell.
A couple. Where's the funding going to come from to fund this?
As you can see, there's a zero fiscal note attached now. We've got a representative from DNR to explain here to explain the fiscal aspect of things. Nico Buss.
Nico. Okay. Well, let's. Yeah. You're going to testify, aren't you, Nico? Okay.
And that's where, you know, I have a couple of different questions, and I'd like to find out more about where the, and I'll give you some time, where the funding is coming from. There's got to be a fiscal note here because we're putting together a commission that we know is going to have meetings. So that's the intent, I hope, that we're going to do this to allow them to meet. So we know there's a cost there.
Okay. I will bring up Nico next. I just wanted to make sure if there's any questions for the sponsors, we'll take those. Anything else for the sponsors? Okay. Okay. Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Nico, do you want to
thank you.
Come on up and join us and address Representative Schultz's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. For the record, my name is Nico Buss. I'm the Administrative Service Manager for the department. The reason for the zero fiscal note is because in our Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, we do have money that was transferred as the establishment of this commission that is in the base budget for this. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Nico.
Go ahead.
You know, we talk about we don't know how many meetings. I understand it's new. Trying to put it together. So I do have some concerns there. I don't have that number off my head, but I'll find it just so I know what it is.
The estimated amount of money for this commission, we figure we need about $10,000. That is to have the meeting. The commission meet about four times, two times in person and two times with teleconference. It's about $10,000, and the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys has that in their budget for this purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My staff gave me an analysis of what DNR has had, and that's in FY03. They had $28,000. For this commission, and then it lapsed. 04, they had 28,000. It lapsed. 05, they have 28,000. For the last the last 3 years, they've had those kinds of funding. So FY06, does it have 28,000, Nico, through the chair, or does it have 10,000?
Through the chair. Representative Holm, indeed, the original amount of money was appropriated in fiscal year 03 that went to the governor's office. The governor's office did not use the money. In 04, that appropriation was transferred to the Department of Natural Resources. They did not use that money and lapsed some of it. In 05, we have the money in our budget with all the other different increases. Some of that money has been set aside for base operations. We do have $10,000 specifically for this commission, but the history that you recited is correct. The original appropriation was $28,000 to the DNR.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, I'm not sure what that means to me. Does that mean that you have an extra $18,000 in your budget that you're going to put someplace else that actually is specified to go here?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, the identity of the $28,000 gets kind of lost after 2 years, but if you're technical about it, you should have $28,000 for the commission. So, but
or lapsing the difference, is that what we're saying?
Given that, for instance, the geological survey moved into a new building in Fairbanks, their lease cost went up $50,000 and that was not budgeted, so some of this money has been going towards the rent. If we would have to make $28,000 available for the commission, then other services would, you know, suffer for that. But technically, you're correct. There's $28,000.
I appreciate what you're saying, Dave. I guess I get sometimes I get a little disturbed that we call one thing, and then we do something else with it. And for us to try and see what's happening, it's very difficult for us to make decisions based upon an actual shell game, because that's exactly what it kind of looks like to me.
The answer to your question is, you know, the zero fiscal note is because we have the money in the DNR budget. If you go back to its origin, it started out to be $28,000. Up to $28,000, they could.
I don't want to beat you up, but I just wanted to point that out.
Yep. Mr.
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Holm.
Representative Stoltz.
I wish I could share some earthquake stories and tsunami stories, but I was at the Christmas
story.
Just a little under 3 years old, so my memories aren't too sharp. But I really appreciate the Fairbanks guys watching out for us on the coast. It have to be pretty biblical to be hitting you guys, a tsunami.
Well, I have Denali Falls in my district, Mr. Chair.
But I just out of here, see, we have the Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer, and we have a lot of we have expert volcanologists and seismic people at the University of Alaska, and you know we pay a lot in the system. And I don't have any philosophical problem, but we have those facilities, but I guess part of the federal. What are those folks doing to give us information that how they interface in all of this? We have a lot of money spent on these efforts.
What are
the 28 grand by us? And not trying to be hypercritical, I just inquisitive.
The through the chair, Representative Stoltz, Rotkin Bellick, he is our operation chief for the Geological Survey. He can explain how the Volcano Observatory and the other functions in his organization and in the university coordinate. And we do have a significant amount of federal funding going into the Volcano Observatory and the various agents working together. So, Rod, are you online?
Yeah, but just hold on a second. Any other questions for Nico? If not, then he is listed here to testify, so we'll go ahead. Rod, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Rod.
Okay, if you could give us your name and affiliation, please, for the record.
For the record, my name is Rod Kambelik. I am the Associate Director for Operations of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys in DNR in Fairbanks. And I just want to know if you can hear me okay. It's very scratchy on this end.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've been listening to the testimony here and the questions. And to respond to that question regarding the other efforts that are going on in the area of hazards in the state, you are correct that there are quite a few efforts underway in the state. The Alaska Volcano Observatory was mentioned. There's the Alaska Earthquake Information Center at the University Geophysical Institute in Fairbanks. There's the Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. These all fulfill one aspect of hazard mitigation, and that is the identification and description of the hazard. There's much more that needs to be done in mitigation in terms of taking this information and putting it to use in terms of identifying ways that we can reduce the vulnerability to the hazards. There's also a significant effort going on, as was mentioned before, in the area of preparedness, where people are given information about what to do when a disaster occurs, and then the response efforts that are largely coordinated by the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management on the preparedness and response side. A lot of what's missing in the middle is to undertake those measures that will reduce the vulnerability, and in so doing, to reduce the need for the response and recovery that costs so much money when these disasters occur. So I think if I interpret the intent of the sponsors on establishing this commission and now extending it, that is to help coordinate all of these efforts and to recommend the policies that would take all this information and put it to use in reducing the vulnerability. Does that adequately answer the question?
Representative Holman, did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes, you did a good job. Thank you. Thank you for that testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to Dr. Gary Carver, Kodiak.
Yes, hello, Mr. Chair and committee. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to provide my statement. My name, for the record, is Dr. Gary Carver. I'm a paleoseismologist or seismic geologist. I've had about 35 years of experience in this field and a good deal of it in Alaska. My first experience in Alaska was in the early 70s when I was a member of the team that did the seismic analysis for the Trans-Alaskan pipeline routing and design. Let me start by reiterating the statement or the mission of this commission. It's to take measures before events, earthquake or tsunami events occur, that reduce future losses, and thus it focuses on the pre-event measures that can help us endure earthquakes that are certainly in our future without having unnecessary or excessive losses to deal with. Alaska is the most seismically active state in the Union. This is important. Of all the states, we are the one that should be doing this kind of work. More than half of all the earthquakes in the United States are Alaskan earthquakes, and about 10% of all those that occur in the world are Alaskan. We have a number of now well-identified, very large and active fault systems. Two in particular to bring to your attention is the Aleutian Alaskan Subduction Zone. It's more or less the twin to the large fault system that has generated the recent disastrous earthquakes in the Indonesian area. And secondly is the Queen Charlotte Fairweather Fault System. This fault system, which extends from the vicinity of the northern Panhandle Sitka area and Yakutat area down along the Panhandle and on into Canada, is essentially the twin to the San Andreas system. And these two fault systems and others, including the Denali fault system in the central part of the state, fault systems near Fairbanks and such, are located in situations or locations where they are very close to most of our population centers. So the bulk of the Alaskan population is indeed in earthquake country. We have a very good example of the role in which the kind of mitigation that this commission would be largely responsible for has already occurred, and that was the events associated with the 2002 magnitude 7.9 earthquake on the Denali Fault in the central part of the state. This earthquake resulted in a rupture of the ground surface under the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline with about 18 feet of differential movement through the pipeline. Much to the credit of Alyeska and the oil companies that sponsored and designed and built this pipeline, that fault was identified and mitigation measures were taken before this earthquake occurred, such that the design of that pipe was specifically to accommodate the kind of motions that occurred. The pipeline did not fail. It was not ruptured. It did not leak, and it was brought back online very quickly. This is a very important and very expensive, in terms of dollars, issue with respect to the state of Alaska. And we dodged a major bullet at that point by having that mitigation kind of thing in place. I strongly urge the committee to move this bill forward. It's a minimal cost to operate a seismic safety commission with the potential for enormous financial benefits to the state. To not do so would eventually cost us much more than we will ever spend on running such a commission. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Carter. I don't see any questions. Thanks for joining us this morning. Okay, next I have Peter Hassler with the USGS in Anchorage.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you,
Peter. All right, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Peter Heusler. I'm a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, or USGS, stationed here in Anchorage. I have a doctorate in geology. I've done work for the USGS for about 14 years. I worked on earthquake hazards, principally in Alaska, but also in the Puget Sound region of Washington. I've served on the Municipality of Anchorage's Geotechnical Advisory Commission, which is, I believe, the only commission in the state that deals with seismic hazards on a local level. The USGS is the principal federal agency that conducts earthquake hazards research in Alaska, and it's also one of the main organizations part of the National Earthquake Hazards Reduction Program. FEMA is also part of that. I would also, just for the record, like to state, as a federal employee, I'm not allowed to lobby, and I feel like I have to walk a little bit of a tightrope testifying here today. But I feel like what I can honestly do is mention the impacts of the establishment of the Alaska Seismic Safety Hazards Commission on the USGS. For the state of Alaska, if I was standing in your shoes, I guess I would view the establishment of this commission as a positive thing. In part, I believe this would result in better information dissemination and much better cross-pollination. Researchers, engineers, people involved with earthquake monitoring, emergency response, business, would be able to share issues, discuss them on a statewide basis, in a way, in a forum that is only
now rarely and less formally done. In an example of this, earlier it was mentioned about Bootlegger Cove having different seismic hazard issues than that on the North Slope. And from my geologist perspective, I would agree that is true. Currently, as I understand it, the insurance companies have basically one rate for the state of Alaska, no matter where you live. Anyway, I think issues like that show that research information can possibly be used to influence business decisions. And so better information dissemination is good for the state of Alaska, and it's also consistent with the mission of the U.S. Geological Survey and our production of research. The Seismic Hazards Commission would also, within its purview, establish priorities for research statewide. And I think this would result in better coordination overall. This is done, there are efforts made to do this, but I think it would improve things in the future. If the Alaska Seismic Hazards Commission made recommendations, I think it would be really hard for the USGS to ignore such recommendations in its view and its funding of earthquake hazards research in Alaska in the future. So this would result in better coordination and focus of federal earthquake hazards research dollars in Alaska. And moreover, I think research recommendations coming from such a statewide commission would carry more weight than the suggestions or recommendations of any single group, whether that's a local government, a state government entity, or a business interest. And so having a group like this to speak with recommendations that the federal government could follow up on, I think would be seen as a positive by the state of Alaska. A corollary of this, at least from my seismic hazards research point of view, is that such research recommendations that a seismic safety commission would produce has the potential to get more federal funding for earthquake hazard studies in Alaska. And I think that's important to do. It's much easier to deal with natural hazards you know something about than the hazards you don't. And having more earthquake hazards research in Alaska would be a good thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hassler. Hope I'm saying that correctly.
It's Heusler, but that's okay.
Okay, great. Okay, I don't have anyone else listed here to testify. We do have Pat Davison here for any questions with the legislative audit.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Hawker.
Could we have a presentation by Mr. Davison?
Yes, I think what we'll do, let's, it's almost time for session. I'm hearing bells, or maybe that's just Representative Chenault here. So I think, and I would like to have more discussion too on the fiscal note and some other issues with this bill. So if we could just hold this over till Monday, we'll take this up Monday morning. We are meeting this afternoon at 1:30, but we have a pretty heavy agenda already. So what we plan on, picking that up at 1:30 on Monday. Just for the committee's knowledge, what we'd like to do is set up a meeting next Saturday to take up the university lands bill, because that's going to take quite a bit of public testimony. So if you could let Suzanne or I know if that will or won't work for you, just so we can have some idea how many people will be here. But otherwise, starting next week, then we'll go back to our 1:30 meeting. Is there anything else to come for the committee? And Ms. Davison, can you join us on Monday?
Yes.
Monday at 1:30? Okay, then we're adjourned until this afternoon at 1:30.
April Fool's Day, you like that?
Yeah.